This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the kitchen studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Blue Shark Vodka. All the taste without the bite. Blue Shark Vodka, coming out of Wilmington, North Carolina. And by Spot On, tech that helps your business grow. And now, one tips 30% and the other one is Matthew Weiss. It's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss, and thank you for at least putting my name first, even if it's... And you didn't say that I didn't tip 30%, you just said the other one is Matthew Weiss, so I might tip 40%.
You probably... Yeah, sure.
Yep.
We'll believe that.
Anyway, we are at the Kitchen Studios, and today we have very special guests, and they are the CEO and the CSO... And that is Chief Sales Officer, for those that don't deal in the C-suite realm.
A lot of
realm.
Acronyms in that business.
Yeah. But they are the CEO, Evan Kleinhans, and CSO, Brooke Gillis, of the Cape Fear Farm Credit Produce Project, which is specifically what we're talking about. Welcome, Evan and Brooke.
Thanks so much for having us. Looking forward to having some conversation today.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, and you guys, because you're in somewhat... in this very cool realm of finance and agriculture, are going to speak directly, actually, to our first new title sponsor, because a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, vodka can be a very agricultural product, especially when you're using local North Carolina non-GMO corn. And Max, do you know who does that?
I'm going to guess. I'm just going to take a little venture to guess, because I heard Brian say it earlier in the, in the beginning.
Cheating.
That Blue Shark Vodka coming out of Wilmington, North Carolina.
Boom.
We're proud to have them as our new title sponsor. And as you were saying, yes, they're made with non-GMO heirloom variety North Carolina sweet corn, distilled four times into perfection, which is great because they're finally like they do triple filtration, which makes the vodka extremely smooth, clean finish, and doesn't get that like real alcoholy bite. It makes that alcohol bite nearly vanish.
Yeah, they're Blue Shark Vodka, the shark that doesn't bite.
Check out Blue Shark Vodka at bluesharkvodka.com. And also, this is kind of like a brand new season. Seasons don't really matter on the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast because we never stop. We have a new episode every Thursday. If you're a loyal listener, you know that. I take a lot of pride in making sure that I can finish an edit right before that Wednesday evening finishes. But we always have a new episode. But today kind of marks the dawning of a new era, which is nice. We have new sponsors. We have Blue Shark Vodka. And we also brought on Spot On. We talk to all kinds of restaurateurs on this podcast, some of them making innovative tacos, others are all about perfecting the classic brisket. We know a little thing about that. They're also working to turn that love of food into a business, and that's often a bigger challenge. So our new sponsor is here to help. Spot On works with popular local restaurants like the Ruddy Duck Tavern and the Village Market in East North Carolina, getting them all set up with technology that they need to stay competitive in this industry. It's the kind of tech the chain down the street is already using, but made specifically for you, like a cloud-based point-of-sale system that not only takes orders and payments, but also ties in online ordering and takeout and delivery. Then it breaks it all down with that data so you can tweak it on your menu and set your staff schedule.
From the fine dining to food trucks, Spot On's integrated restaurant management system can help make running a restaurant less stressful and more successful. And you get this end-to-end solution built specifically for your needs by a real person. That's right, Tanya Manibo. She's your local Spot On account executive, and she'll be your partner the whole way. You can just give her a call at 858-213-7820. That's right. That's her personal cell phone number, 858-213-7820. Or send her an email. That's TanyaM@spoton.com. We'll also put all that information in the show notes. And check out Spot On. It's where business is personal.
Leave it up to Matt to give girls' phone numbers out on the podcast. Very nice.
Always inappropriate. Thank you. So we're speaking about agriculture. Tell us about Cape Fear Farm Credit because you guys have a very specific niche in funding agriculture in North Carolina. So how did it begin and where is it going?
Thanks, Matt and Max, for having us. We work for Cape Fear Farm Credit, and we're a farmer-owned lending cooperative. We've been in business for over 100 years, and we serve 12 counties in southeastern North Carolina. We're headquartered in Fayetteville, North Carolina, but we're also part of the broader Farm Credit System. And the Farm Credit System covers all 50 states and Puerto Rico, and we have a combined mission to serve agriculture and rural communities with a reliable source of credit and financial services. And so we really exist to serve agriculture and those that live and work in the countryside, often underserved markets. And so we're a relationship-based lender, and so we really focus on building relationships with local producers, and that can be big and small and everything in between, agribusinesses and also rural residents. And so that's a little bit about us. We provide their financing needs through challenging times and bad. We exist to serve a very small segment of the market, and that's all that we do.
And how did the farm credit begin? Was it farmers getting together, or was it a finance person saying, hey, you guys need to come together and get some help?
So we're actually a government-sponsored enterprise.
Okay.
And so the farm credit system was created through an act of Congress.
Okay.
And so we're a government-sponsored enterprise that covers all 50 states, as I shared. And we exist to provide that stability in the food system for the United States and to serve an often underserved marketplace, which is ag and rural communities.
Right on. So I know, and by the way, that sound you're hearing, which is some beautiful, delicious coffee, and the smell and the aromas in here is from our Chemex, and Max is doing the gooseneck pour over right now on our Joe Van Gogh coffee, which we'll get more into later. But Brooke, you see this from all sides because your family is in farming. You come from a small family farm, and yet you also deal on the sales side of that. So that's got to be a very interesting dichotomy.
Yeah. So farming is very important to me, obviously, for the points that you have shared today. But I have to say, farm credit has always been a part of my life as well.
Okay.
Growing up on the family farm, I can remember the lawn officer physically coming out to the farm. She would have lunch with us. So, I see it from all aspects. I think that Cape Fear is an important piece of the business with our local farmers because we are a reliable source of credit. And then, of course, the farmers work hard day in and day out to provide us a reliable food source.
Right. I'm just going to I always have to wrap my head around things to really understand it in my own context that helps me. So you guys may or may not know this, but in my day job, I work in wine sales. I work for a wholesaler, and we represent this winery called Borsal. It's in Campo de Borja, Spain. And what they are is a cooperative, but like we say out in the market, they're like the good cooperative. So they support over 200 small family farmers who bring their grapes to the cooperative, and then they make wine there. And if this co-op didn't exist, these farmers would have nowhere to go with their grapes, or they would just have bigger wineries or bigger conglomerates come in and either buy their farm or buy their grapes and pay cents on the dollar, versus the cooperative has a set price, they pay for them, and then they make great wine. And these cooperatives or these small family farms constantly have a source of income and a place to sell their grapes. So it's similar to what you guys do in the sense that you're supporting your local farmers.
Absolutely. And so what is so interesting about a cooperative model is that the ownership of the business and the customers are one and the same.
Right.
And so with the success of the co-op, so goes the success of our customers. So as we make a profit, we turn around and pay that back to our customers in the form of patronage, which ultimately reduces their cost to borrow money with us. And so there's not a difference between the stakeholders that own the business and the customers. They are, in fact, one and the same, which really helps strengthen. It's a win-win scenario for everyone involved.
Well, because agriculture for North Carolina is a major product. It's one of our biggest industries in general. I think like tourism might be number one, but agriculture is right there. Agriculture number one?
Agriculture is number one, over $95 billion of impact to the local economy here in North Carolina.
Wow.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so that makes sense that the government would also want to make sure that they're ensuring their longevity and their future. I know that future is a big deal, as we were talking about. One of the messages that plays really strongly from your website through your messaging about securing farming for the long haul and not just worrying about today, but the growth, because we're not just talking about North Carolina in the end, because it's such a large economy for us. We're doing a lot of international business as well, as you were stating before we got on the mics. But maybe we can get into that a little bit. Like, what's the sexiest thing coming out of North Carolina that the rest of the world is looking for? Like, what are some of the things that we're selling in an agricultural level that that everybody else kind of looks at from us?
Well, I'll start and then I'll let Brooke jump in. You know, agriculture is a really important part of the economy here in North Carolina. There's a lot of bright spots, so I could talk about this a lot. But the protein industry is really large here, so there's a lot of pork and chicken production. Those are the top two. There's also a lot of sweet potatoes and blueberries and specialty crops. And so there's a really, really diverse agricultural industry here that covers a lot of different interesting types of commodities. And so all of those are really vital. And we see a lot of diversification within these individual producers. These producers are not growing just one thing, and that really helps them grow their business over time. Agriculture is an extremely cyclical business. And so as they're able to diversify across different commodities, it really helps them strengthen. And so there's a lot of bright spots here in Raleigh with the Research Triangle Park and a lot of universities that help with a lot of the innovation and technology. But also, I think it gets down to the local farmer. We just have some of the best farmers in the world here that they compete globally. And it is a bright spot here in North Carolina where we're growing all types of agricultural products that really help not only feed the country, but feed the world, a lot of export as well. And so, Brooke, what did I leave out?
Yeah, so I would just touch on just the diversification that we have in Eastern North Carolina. It's pretty amazing when you start to think about what's produced here, right? You have grapes, watermelons, blueberries, strawberries, corn. I mean, and it goes into making your breads that you eat, the wine that you love to taste. And so it's not only
the vodka
like
vodka that you make shake
up. Oh, yes, yes, vodka for sure. So, I mean, it goes back to it's locally produced. That's what we have going for us. It's safe. Is traceable from the consumer side, right? As a consumer, we want to know what are we feeding our children. And so the ports also, like, it just opens up the doors to be able to, we're right along the coast. I mean, from Raleigh, what, guys, how far are we from the coast?
2 hours less.
I mean, the farmer can go to the coast and they can sell their product or it can be exported. And like Evan talked about, you know, just the swine and the poultry that we have in Eastern North Carolina, you don't find that diversification in other states.
You know, when we were in, my family and I were in France back in 2018, we found in Lyon a barbecue restaurant, and they were proudly serving North Carolina swine, as it was written on the menu. And I just thought, I'm like, that is so cool and funny that, you know, especially as a Los Angelino, I probably wouldn't have really taken much account had we not lived in North Carolina before that. I would have been like, oh, that's cool. They're getting pigs from America, but I wouldn't have thought of it like, oh, North Carolina. But for the rest of the world, the perspective of like North Carolina pork is like the way we look at, you know, what's the Japanese beef?
Kobe.
Yeah, it's like kind of like our style of, you know, really, really good high-end pork. But it is cool. I wonder, talk to me a little bit about, like, North Carolina's gone through a lot of change through the tobacco industry kind of changing a lot, which led to a lot of farms like repurposing. I have to imagine that Cape Fear Farm Credit like had a lot to do or was instrumental in helping farms to kind of reset themselves. Is there any truth into what I'm saying right there? Like, and how did that affect the farming industry?
Yep. So historically, I'm sure you guys have heard, you know, Tobacco Farm afforded a lot of families to be able to send their children to school and provided a really good living. And so when we started to experience the tobacco buyout, several of the farmers just decided, you know what, I'm going to get out while the getting's good, right? And so there's still some farmers that are involved in the tobacco industry today and very thankful for that. But they did start to diversify their operations and start to look at, well, what commodity can I go into now? And so they did. I mean, it might have been the swine, the poultry, it could have been expanding row crops, but it did afford the families to diversify, like I said. So there's still some tobacco farmers around,
sure.
But now there are, some of them are more focused towards different commodities.
So is that something on your guys' day-to-day that you're working with these farmers that you that are your customers and also your owners at the same point? It's kind of like the Green Bay Packers for those football fans, you know?
Yeah.
Are they, you know, I'm stuck with my tobacco and I'm not achieving or earning as much with that, and they say, hey, can you come help support me or lend money for me to diversify and start a new crop or get pigs or get whatever that is to start their new crop? Is that kind of how that works? Is that kind of what your day-to-day is help finding them?
Yep, absolutely. So it's not uncommon for a farmer to come in and say, hey, Brooke, or whoever the loan officer may be, I have this great idea about I want to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of where we come in, is to help them realize their dreams, right?
Okay.
Help them to say, hey, is it going to make money? Because they need to support their family. We definitely help them explore opportunities.
Is there anything new in North Carolina that's up and coming that people are like, ooh, this is the next thing? Because obviously we know about the sweet potato. We know about the swine. Is there anything that, like, is
marijuana?
Cannabis. where do you guys stand on that?
That California guy had to just pipe up.
Well, you know,
there is a lot of CBD, now legal CBD dispensaries. So, yeah, where do you guys stand on that?
There's been a lot of interest in the hemp industry over the last several years. A lot of people have speculated that it may be an on-ramp to a variety of different things. As far as the legality of, you know, hemp financing, there's certainly, you know, North Carolina was part of a pilot program with several other states. And so what that pilot program was designed to do, to let local producers learn how to grow the crop, figuring it out. It is a very high risk crop at this point in time. It's not a mature market, and so there's a lot of things that are going on. And so, as part of a diversified operation, you know, we're seeing that there are some segments in it, but we see that there has been as it often occurs with immature markets, there's just been a lot of volatility that we've seen with that. And so I don't know that that's the wave, but we'll just wait and see kind of how the market matures over time. But certainly, hemp has created a lot of buzz over the recent years.
That's the most I've seen you move since I've seen you. You got a little squirmy in the chair there.
Yeah, working a little bit.
I kid, but yeah, that's fun. So I want to get back to this idea of local farming, for lack of a better way to say this, saving the world in very much. So can you link those dots? Because obviously we know, but give some of the tangible things, like, you know, obviously you're saving on gas and trucking, you're building jobs. What are the other things that we do think of, but maybe we need to even think more on, of why it's so important to buy locally and support local agriculture?
Sure. So I'll start with that. You know, we're a purpose-driven organization, and we exist to serve agriculture, to enrich the lives of other people. And it goes back to the conversation that we started a few minutes ago, is, well, you know, agriculture is a really volatile industry. There's a lot of things that are moving very rapidly. And our job is to lean into some of those challenges, right? So, you know, as risk presents itself with the tobacco industry, for example, as it's changed, we're not backing away from that. We exist to lean into that, to help our producers find a transition. We help many of them transition to sweet potato production. A lot of the land that historically grew tobacco is now in production for sweet potatoes. So that's just an example about how we do a small part. You know, the agricultural producers, the farmers, are the ones that deserve the credit. They're the ones that are getting up each and every day, putting their boots on, finding innovative new ways to be able to safely feed the world. Our part in that is to just provide, as a business partner to them, just a little piece, whether that's knowledge or advice or access to the money they need to fulfill their dreams. That's the little piece that we do. But I would really give credit to the producers. They're the ones that really are driving the industry forward. And so, you know, feeding the world is really important. And to your point a minute ago, you know, the pandemic that we've recently just went through was the first time that many of us went to a grocery store and saw bare shelves. Yeah. Food scarcity was
of,
correct.
Yeah, the chain being broken.
Correct. And so that stable source of capital to make sure that we all have a food supply is really important. So that's part of that connection. We also do a lot of things that we can touch on in the future about giving back to the communities that we live and work on. That's part of the Produce Project here. But I'll pause there, and that's a little bit of my perspective there.
Yeah, speaking about world, this is a good time, a little segment here, just because the coffee is ready, and I want you all to drink it and try it while it's nice and hot. We're talking about Joe Van Gogh coffee. Take a quick break just for this delicious little sip. Oh, here it comes. So This is their Ethiopian Hambala Benti Nenka blend. It's Eastern African, coming from Ethiopia, and talking about world in general. Joe Van Gogh has sources for beans all over the world. The Ethiopian style, this particular one, kind of throws out plum and black tea, kind of honey notes in there. It really pulls out beautifully, especially the way I masterfully poured over in the Chemex. Mm-hmm. But you have these great varieties. You get a little bit of citrus. That tea flavor definitely comes through. There's a little bit of sweetness, but it comes from Hambala Wamena, which is a district of Guji that borders the Gadab region of Yirgacheffe.
Well, did you know that that area is known for its ripe cherry selection by farmers and also has very high elevations that makes the cherries wonderful?
I learned that just now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, we can't, but like these microclimates are so, I was just talking to somebody about coffee yesterday, and the microclimates of coffee are not unlike microclimates of wine. Like, you look at, you know, oh, Burgundy, it's going to be all Pinot Noir. It's going to all taste like this. Like, oh, no. Because once you start getting in there, you realize west facing sun or slope side over here. You've got a meadow over here. You got all these different things. Well, that's still true for coffee as well, kind of for any crop. And I like that you kind of tie it all in. We could talk about North Carolina's crops and how diverse that can be. But the same stuff is still happening even in East Africa and everything kind of blended together. The nice people over at Joe Van Gogh, though, were able to supply us and the two of you with a little bit of the same coffee to take home. Grind it yourself. Scale it out. What is it? 22 grams? Per coffee or per cup, and then 17-to-1 water ratio to coffee. I just learned all these things. I'm going to get better.
Thankfully to the people of Joe Van Gogh to really, I mean, legitimately help us up our coffee game.
Yeah. Go to JoeVanGoghCoffee.com and learn more information from there. You can get any of their coffees at any of their locations and also from their partner brands that they sell retail as well.
Cheers.
What a treat. Thanks.
Yeah. I want to press you on something here, Evan and Brooke. Feel free to weigh in. And also, we need to talk about the Produce Project that you guys did and was awesome about a year ago at this time. But you mentioned about the grocery stores. For me, that was more a issue of supply chain, which actually in in some respects, 18 months later, we're still dealing with a lot of supply chain things. But I really want to touch on this thing because I don't think that we think about it in our daily lives is why it's so important to buy local and buy local from our local farms. And that's a hard thing to do also because it's often more expensive because it's not subsidized and things like that. But when you talk about the things, well, when you do include the supply chain, you're talking about using more gasoline, the effects of cars on the environment and major trucking conglomerates. But also when you buy local, well, that means that those people, they're getting more revenue, your local farmers, which means that they can afford to pay, they're going to pay more taxes, which is in turn going to improve our infrastructure, our education, and all those things. So, but there's more. There's more that, like, we don't even think about. So is there anything that you guys want to add to that and, like, why that will legitimately change the world for the better?
Yeah, so if you think about the farmers and they're producing the product locally, you know, I like to I have a son, and so I always like to tell my close friends when they're like, well, why agriculture, Brooke? Why do you want to be involved in agriculture? I'm like, well, I raised my son on this farm. I know that the product that we're producing is safe, right? I know what goes into my product. But then, you know, on the flip side of that, also remember all of those people that you have employed on that farm, right? Mm-hmm. They have families too. Right. So it affords them the opportunity to be able to stay local and provide for their families. You know, also you talk about the supply chain, you know, getting the product to the grocery store, or getting the product to the consumer. I would encourage us, too, to think about the farmer. You know, we're sitting here and we can't get the supplies that we need to pack our product to get it to the consumer. And so that's just one of the challenges that the farmers face. And the farmers do such an awesome job of just pouring their heart and soul into that product to making sure that it's safe and that it's quality and you know what you're getting. And look, if you're not happy with the product, you can go back to the farmer and say, hey, I just bought this last week. You can't exactly go back to the grocery store and get that same service.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, here's a naive question, I guess, but why, if I'm a farmer, why would I go to the Cape Fear Farm Bureau as opposed to just like Wells Fargo or Bank of America to get a loan?
Yep. So the nice thing about Cape Fear Farm Credit is that we're going to be with you in the long haul, right? We want the relationship. We understand your business. You don't have to come in and every time that we have a turnover, which our employees stay for a long time. So that's nice, right, Evan?
Yep.
Yeah. So the producer doesn't have to come in and explain their operation. They don't have to say, hey, Matt, hey, Max, I want to grow blackberries. And they get a blank stare.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a nice piece about doing business.
Language.
That's right. Yeah, we understand their business.
We specialize. Cool. In other words, I mean, we pride ourselves on being a trusted advisor in the agricultural space. We've got a lot of resources that we pull together to be able to become experts in agricultural production in North Carolina. And so, to your point, we speak their language and we're there through thick and thin, and that's why we exist. You know, there's other competitors out there, certainly, you know, and they have, you know, different products and services as well. But, you know, we're a niche player. We focus specifically on ag and rural, and we pride ourselves on being the best in the world at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there was like Cape Fear Podcast Credit Union, that's probably who we'd go to if we wanted to get new microphones or something.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because
they know. It's podcasting to me.
Well, I mean, you kid, but I remember Max and I, when we were first starting out, we went, I won't name their names, but we talked to an organization about, you know, some like business coaching. Hey, where can we go to help monetize this and like take it seriously? And they were like, a podcast. So is that like on the radio?
Oh,
and
yeah.
they had no idea what a podcast was. And I was like, well, how can we really ask you to coach us if you don't really understand the medium? So that is extremely helpful when you specialize in understanding agriculture and agriculture in North Carolina.
Yeah, because pardon the pun, but your farmers can get in the weeds with you about like a particular thing. You're like, I know everyone's doing blackberries, but I want to do this particular one that grows better in this region because of the humidity or the soil content I have, which I know will gain market share for this particular reason. And you're like, yeah, I get what you're saying. Good luck talking to the guys over at Wachovia. Picked
which
it,
is
it doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, no one's offended. Yeah, but yeah, like you can speak into their terms. So that makes sense. I mean, yeah, it could probably feel like you're dealing with like an evil empire when you do go into like those well-known banks or whatever, and you're like, I'm just this little farmer trying to do this stuff. But it's more relatable, I would say, in this scenario.
We also have, you know, we're funded differently. We also have more flexibility, we believe, in being able to structure loans specifically for agriculture. So if you think about repaying a loan tied to agriculture, you're not paying a monthly payment that's set up like a standard mortgage might. And so we understand the cash flows, we understand the business, and also, you know, we have specific borrowers' rights that exist to be able to help our customers. We have an obligation to find the best possible outcome for our producer, and so we believe we have some enhancements that just allow us to be able to fulfill our mission, which is to be there, you know, well over 100 years, providing that stable source of financial services and credit to agriculture. We exist for a reason, and that's what we lean in to do.
So get deep with me there. How does it work differently than a typical mortgage for a farmer?
So, I mean, it depends on whether you're looking at a short-term operating line or a long-term financing. We do all types of things, but we have the flexibility to be able to design a product that meets the exact needs of that specific crop, that specific business that you're growing. And I'm quickly getting into Brooke's world here, but jump in here. But, you know, that's really the specifics, and flexibility is what we offer.
So let me take you. Let me press you on that, because let's say let's take a hypothetical, or if you guys have specific examples, please. But I want to start a winery. Now, I know, I mean, southeastern North Carolina may be a little bit more difficult, but let's just say I want to grow grapes. Now, when I'm making wine, I'm not going to get a return on my product for at least 3 years, really, to make wine. I mean, I could sell them as table grapes, but so how would I, how would that, sell me on that. How would that be structured then, Brooke?
Sure, yeah. So it's kind of the same as a blueberry plant, right? Okay. Did you know that a blueberry plant isn't fully mature until like 3 to 5 years and start getting revenue then?
Well, yeah, of course, everybody knows that. I did have an idea because my damn blueberry plant goes like three, you know, blueberries, and it's now like 3 years old. So, yes, I did know that.
Yeah, so we can't expect you to make your payment a full annual payment, principal and interest the first year, right? So we have some flexibility.
Okay.
We can set you up on a line, a construction line, in essence, is what it is. You pull the money off to get your product in the ground. Once your product is mature, then we'll set up your principal and interest. Doesn't have to be a full principal and interest payment up front. We can do a step-up payment. That way you can pay
meaning
for your...
Meaning as I'm gaining more revenue
that's
than
exactly
I...
exactly right. Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
Cool. I like that. All right. We've talked a lot of money and finance and setting you guys up as like, you know, the finance people. But let's talk about this produce project that you guys did. It was about a year ago, right?
And we're doing it again now.
And you're doing it again
right now.
Okay.
Yep.
So started July 30th last year. So almost exactly a year, a little over a year that you did this. Yeah.
And we're back in it, doing it again, too, for the second time because of its success.
So what are we talking about?
So the produce project, you know, part of fulfilling that purpose of serving agriculture to enrich the lives of others, we try to give back to the communities that we live and work in. Brooke talked earlier about, you know, buying local. We really focus on the local communities that we live and work in. And so during the height of the pandemic last year, we talked about the supply chain disruption. And so we had farmers in southeastern North Carolina that had beautiful produce that had nowhere to go. We had people that were looking for food but couldn't find what they were looking for in the grocery store. And also, you know, it really amplified the food insecurity that exists, especially in some rural areas in southeastern North Carolina. So we decided to just put our resources together and help connect those dots. And so what we did was purchase the produce using our resources, not asking for donations, but we purchased the produce from local producers to help them in a time of need. And then we used volunteer hours from all of our employees to be able to pull all this together. We packaged it up into bags and to boxes, and we worked with local partners all across southeastern North Carolina in all 12 counties that we serve to be able to find families that were in need. And so we were able to feed last year over 2,700 people doing this project. We're doing it again and are on pace. So in total, within the last 12 months, we think that we'll be able to reach about 6,000 people in southeastern North Carolina to give them healthy, safe produce that was grown right here. And so that was just part of us giving back to the communities with nutritious food. A lot of these areas that have food insecurity, finding nutritious food is the big challenge.
Right.
There's actually food deserts that exist in places to be able to get this. And so we were able to connect the dots and use the resources that we have available to us to be able to give back. And so that's just a little bit about what we're doing.
Bravo.
Yeah, I mean, not to like plug what I'm doing with Kip, with Crafton, but that's part of why we intentionally decided to not open our businesses in the heart of Raleigh or Durham or the bigger cities, if you will. We're like, no, let's do this, which we think is a cool idea. It's a small food hall, but let's do them in places where they are kind of quote unquote food deserts. I mean, first location's in Knightdale, the second's going to be in Clayton. Clayton's getting built up right now, so it's turning into a pretty big hub now. But there still is, no offense, but there's a lot of bow time happening out, and there's a lot of Mickey D's and a lot of, you know, Taco Bell going on. And it's like, that's not, that should not be your only source of finding food. And, you know, it's completely inexpensive. So again, like it panders to someone that's not doing well. And they're like, you know, you can eat, you can feed your family, you can do all this stuff. It's like, yeah, but what are you really feeding your family? You're feeding them just junk. And I mean, I know I'm like the worst. I speak out of both sides of my mouth because I still go to Taco Bell all the time.
But I was going to say, I'm glad you included Taco Bell because that's how I knew you were being sincere.
Yeah. But I eat Taco Bell because it's yummy, not because I have to. I guess that sounds like, I don't mean to be callous when I say that, but there are sometimes people are like, that's the only place I can go to eat because it's the only thing available. And being able to reach these smaller markets and all is purposeful to kind of like understand, like, hey, they're... life is not like what it is here in this city or in Charlotte or Asheville or in many of the cities that are all around North Carolina. You just go a few minutes out and there's nothing built up. I mean, it's widely affected. So speaking to that, how does one get a produce box? Like if I'm living in a small town and I'm like, yeah, my family could use some of these resources. How did we go about getting them?
So, you know, what we did was, because we were local, we have people that live and work in those communities. We allowed each local branch to be able to find the best distributors in that area. And so they were different. We didn't use the same partner. And so we used different food banks, charities, all types of different areas. And so we would just did it on a very grassroots and local level. And we let the people that were local make the decisions about where they could make the best impact. And then we promoted it locally within that area, saying, you know, here, there's food available at this location. Go for it.
Yeah. And we actually received calls from outside individuals just saying, hey, can I please come by and get a bag? We're like, absolutely. We put them in contact with each community representative that we had shared the bags with. So we actually got to meet some of the folks that received the bag, and it's a pretty humbling experience.
Yeah. You know, I was, I said I'd save something earlier, Matt, before we came on, and it was, I was watching, this kind of ties back, I was watching on Disney Plus the Wolfgang Puck documentary,
okay,
which I highly encourage everyone to watch. Now, for me, you may or may not know, but I worked for Wolfgang Puck for 5.5 years in Los Angeles at a couple of his cafes and restaurants. And so for me, like, it all began with Wolfgang, and really in California, it kind of did when it comes to like what current restaurants look like. And if you think about what restaurants then were about before him, it was no connection to the farm. And everything just came in on a truck, and you just got what it was. But he, as it showed in his life kind of growing up, when he went from Austria into France to kind of learn the right culinary style, he was working at a restaurant that owned a massive, like, I forget how many acres, but a massive farm just for their restaurant. And so that was the way he looked at it. He's like, you have to have a farm, and you have to, you know, that's what supplies the kitchen, the pantry, the refrigerators, everything comes from our own style. But when he came to Los Angeles, kind of just for a fun new life and all, he's looking around at like sourcing. He became a head chef at a restaurant that previous to him was kind of not a great restaurant. It was like the cousin or so of like a really well-known restaurateur in France, but he's running basically a hack job restaurant in Los Angeles. And he's like, okay, now that I'm in charge of throwing all this frozen crap away, I'm going to go find some farmers. And he found Chino Farms, which if you're in Los Angeles, you know Chino Farms. That's like badass, really, really thoughtful farming. And the only reason why you know Chino Farms is because Wolfgang, who everyone knows, brought light onto it and said farming is important. And this connects. And this connects to everybody's food, like how you have to go to the beginning to find, you know, why it's important at the end. And so I was looking at all that, and it's like, oh, wow, I never realized that that was, like, he changed the scope of the importance of, like, what we thought. But, like, he kind of connected the dots. I know a lot of other chefs have done it too, but on his global scale, so especially once he had like a television show, he brought it to light. Like, this is why it's important. And so I was like watching it, and I was just filled with like love. I was like, oh my God, this feels so good to like remember those days working with them and seeing like the shipping coming in and like, oh yeah, everything was local. I didn't know it at the time, but it was like, this was an evolution of food. And it's so cool that like you come back now to a state that North Carolina that's so prevalent in agriculture, and our food industry and our restaurant industry is so important to us, that you really do see the connections and like pulling it all together. With that, with the produce project, are you doing things, what are their connections with restaurants through this time of adjustment? I mean, I don't know. I didn't ask you before this, but was that like not really like a particular thing? It was more about the consumer, like the person, right?
It was more about the consumer, especially because when we created this project, remember, restaurants were largely closed.
Right. You
know? So this started during the pandemic. There was really not a lot of restaurants open. And so that was part of it. So the restaurant avenue, certainly that farm to table is really important in the broader aspect of what we do. We finance a lot of farmers, especially that are working in partnerships with a lot of these restaurants and farmers markets. And so on a broad spectrum, absolutely, we're working with those producers. With respect to the specific project created during the height of the pandemic, it was really just about finding people that were hungry, that were in need of nutritious food, and filling that gap for a period of time.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a great mission. I mean, we always talk about this, or we've talked about this now for literally 5 years almost, that we have this surplus of agriculture and food that sometimes, to use an expression, dies on the vine or dies on the farm, and yet we have this unbelievable amount of food insecurity, which is the greatest irony. And I really, it just seems like we can't find the right solution to those things. I mean, I know these small projects help, but it's just one step. You know, we need a lot more steps. However, I think one step, and I think you were kind of tying this in, is not just the restaurant, the farm-to-table restaurant, but what about, like, for example, you're growing blackberries and blueberries. Well, why can't we work with, like, our local tropical smoothie cafes? You know, they're all over. Or Smoothie King, you know, like a big corporation like that that has a lot of local local stores. Why can't they buy North Carolina locally farmed blueberries and blackberries for their smoothies? Is there any connections like that in the works, or things like that that could potentially happen?
You know, I'm seeing a progression. You know, I think people are starting to figure this out. You know, I've listened to some of the other guests you've had, and, you know, there's different technologies and different companies that are starting to piece together, you know, this puzzle. It's not an easy problem to solve.
Right.
You know, if it was, it would have been solved by now. But I think leveraging technology, leveraging relationships, I think we're making positive progress there. And there's some really interesting companies that are really just starting to gain some traction here, right here. And you know, so I think North Carolina is leading in this space. And so, you know, I'm optimistic to see what happens.
Maybe through some efficiencies, through technology, we can understand, like, okay, we have this many units over here. This is all going to go away if we can't find a home for it. So maybe we can start figuring out more of like a routing system so that things aren't getting thrown away, that things aren't being overly grown. Maybe, you know, maybe Cape Fear Credit Union, Cape Fear
Farm Credit.
Maybe you guys could say to, you know, Farmer John, say, you know, you're growing a lot of blueberries, but guess what? Everyone wants blackberries. So maybe it's time to switch it up a little bit, or maybe we need a little bit more of this and a little less of this, and so that there's more tailoring to the market and what everybody needs, so that it becomes, so then, like, the Smoothie King is like, oh, wow, this is a competitive price. This makes sense. We have to be more intentional about that, and so that we're creating a supply for the demand rather than just trying to figure out what to do with this supply.
Well, I think what Max is saying is, could that be part of your services, I guess, is what we say, is like, not only are you, you know, because you said you're invested in their success, so part of their success was is finding outlets for their produce, you know, especially if they do have a surplus, or if they're not, or if there isn't the local demand. So, like, you guys have a big power behind you. Why couldn't you guys have somebody as a liaison to these bigger companies who have franchises in North Carolina, even in southeastern North Carolina, and, you know, connect them with your local farmers?
We can certainly use our network. You know, we have a limited scope of eligibility. So, you know, in essence, we're limited by what we can and can't do. So we don't just have a broad brush to be able to go out. But so our focus is really on the financial services. We can certainly help with the education piece. We can certainly help with connecting the dots and providing the capital to be able to fund those businesses. But really, that innovation comes from industry itself. I think we could help connect the dots, and we would be there to partner as their financial partner.
Right.
There.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that there's plenty of companies and people out there that can capitalize on that, and we would like to work with them. But as far as us driving that, there needs to be a separation between, you know, the producer and the decisions that they're making versus us as a financial partner. And so we got to be careful not to blur those lines.
The farmer might hopefully figure it out after, like, dropping 60% of their entire crop 1 year because no one's buying it. You know, it's like, but is the problem that no one's buying it, or is it there's no need for it? Like, that becomes part of the bigger problem, or the hopefully a better solution is, are we doing all the things that we need to do to make it efficient? You know, it's the same thing. Like, everybody wants to be a Instagram influencer, but no one wants to learn calculus. It's
right.
Like, can we do things like, can there be more diversification about what we grow and what we want? And then that way we can utilize everything without feeling like, man, I just threw away so much broccoli. Well, maybe you grew too much broccoli, you know?
Like, yeah.
Could you grow something that everybody else wants or something? I don't know.
Well, it's like anything. You have to have two aspects to your business, right? Like, you have to be good at for example, the content that you provide, whether that be broccoli or you're telling stories. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be the other side of it where you're going to, for lack of a better word, sell that product, right? And so finding right. avenues for that, like who wants to
Someone
listen?
Someone definitely needs to sell broccoli or sell vegetables because it's not a cool thing for say kids, even for just whomever. It's like, yeah, I'll have it if Matt Kelly's making it, because he's going to do an awesome version of anything like that. But speaking to the same thing with the Wolfgang Puck part, they were talking about back in the 50s, 60s, like no one ate their veggies because the veggies were disgusting. You just were steaming carrots or steaming peas. And it's like, of course, every kid's like, I don't want this. This is gross. But now, today, we understand how to work with a carrot to where it's yummy and it's delicious and you can do it the right way. So maybe that's part of the evolution, too, is that we're getting better at utilizing our raw materials.
Yeah.
I think some of the challenge with agriculture, and I'll let Brooke speak to this because, you know, she comes from a family farm, but is the timing, the yields, the weather. It's an extremely dynamic situation. Mm-hmm. So it's not a linear process. We know on X date that X yield, Y yield is going to occur, right? So, I mean, you've got this fluctuation. You got weather. You've got all kinds of this extremely dynamic, issues going on that are driving the timing of when that crop is ready to be harvested, and that right. A lot of times it all comes on at the same time, and so finding the evening that out, I think, is part of the challenge. So Brooke, I'll let you speak to just from your perspective as you see what producers face.
Yeah, the weather waits on no one is what we say at our farm. I mean, it can be you have 50 acres of watermelons and they're all coming off at the same time. Well, you better make sure that you've done much work in marketing that product, because there's going to be a 5-day window that you've got to ship all that out.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely a hurdle that the farmers have to overcome. And again, we can't control the weather. And so they try to plan accordingly. And we hope that people's going to pick up the product. But the reality is sometimes they don't show to pick up the product.
Hmm. Well, this is kind of what I'm driving at. And I'm wondering, like, so these are essentially, as I understand it, a cooperative of farms. So is there somebody kind of in charge and working on like the logistics, and you're a chief sales officer? So like, I know your job is selling loans to farmers and getting them financed, but is there somebody that they could come together? So it's not only like a financial institution, but in a somewhat of a marketing and sales perspective, that they're helping these farmers coordinating, because if you're good at farming, it's probably not what you're focused on of getting your product out there, and especially getting your product to a sustainable source, like a big conglomerate that has local chains. And then there's a whole other end of actual the distribution project, right? Like that's why we have wholesalers and stuff. But
right.
even if and I'm sure they're due, but how much is US Foods or Sysco going to these rural areas to pick up, get produce, and then and because they could be obviously a stopgap for that, like the perfect middleman.
Those companies do a lot of local business with local farmers too, because mainly just because of logistics. It's easier to just grab some local stuff to bring to somebody because it's less cost. But
is it? Because I'm sure, and no offense to Wolfgang, but it's also the greatest irony, because now, his frozen soups and frozen pizzas and all that stuff is available in every grocery store around America.
Yeah, so. But his sourcing is still the same. So that's the thing. It's like he still finds the source. So that's actually great for the contracts that he created with those farmers way back. Now, those farmers might be big pharma and whatever, and you can look at them as an evil empire. It's like, yeah, but wasn't that the goal all along? Was to bring you along and create your efficiency so that you could grow and get big and have somebody that helped guide you? So basically what we're saying is we need more Wolfgangs in this world to like help guide people to say, hey, Farmer John, you should be doing this because this is what the market needs. Hey, slow down on this production and let's even it out. You're right. For both of you, it's not necessarily a bank or a union, a credit union's responsibility to say, this is what you got to do and this is what we need. But that is a big blind spot in wasting food, not having hungry children, and having food distribution gone in the wrong direction. So that that's not going to get solved in this podcast, but that is a question that everybody needs to figure out. And
it is going to get solved right now. I'm tying you guys down to this desk, and we're going to hash it out. Yeah. We're going to talk and talk and talk till we get it done.
but you mentioned watermelons earlier, and I noticed when I walked into the studio, you were here before us. Like all good farmers, you wake up early.
Right.
You get it all done
early. Early bird is the worm.
I couldn't even get through the opening, the front of my kitchen door, because it was just waylaid with about 98 watermelons in the front. Is that your doing?
Yep. Yep. So my family wanted to make sure that you had watermelons. So that is Melon Direct LLC to
Box
thank for
checked.
That.
Thank yes. you. It's which farm? I'm sorry?
Melon Direct LLC, a division of Hall Brothers Farms.
That is awesome. So, yeah, we're
going to
have
Melon Direct.
A watermelon juice stand out here. You might know we've done some fantastic watermelon cocktails down over at Y Hill.
I was going to say, we'll sell them to Y Hill.
I'll sell them five times more than what it's worth and make some money off this guy.
We'll donate it back to Melon Direct.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Thank you for supplying, because we could definitely get some usage out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome. Look, I appreciate you both coming in and speaking to us about the farming industry in general, agriculture, but then also how to really make it work if it makes sense, and how to support agriculture. Because yes, shopping local, purchasing local, keeping things in the local economy helps, so that we can actually go outside of our state too and be international and do those things and grow. But you do have to take care of your inside infrastructure first, and that's where you guys come in. So thank you for doing that. Thanks for coming all the way out here, because Brooke, you're outside of like Fayetteville. You're saying, I love the names of these towns. What town are you from?
Beaver Dam.
And Evan, what town are you from?
Stedman, North Carolina.
Stedman, yes. That's not Oprah's husband. That's not his town, is it?
There's about 500 of us, so I think we're probably somewhere.
If he was like walking by, oh, Stedman.
Yeah. But if I'm a local farmer in southeastern North Carolina, how would I get in touch with you guys and start a conversation if I needed some help financially?
Yep. So we can be found. Obviously, we have a website, Instagram, Facebook. Search us, find us.
CapeFearFC.com.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put links in our show notes as well, so you can do that. And then selfishly, just for you two, before you get out of here, you're going to have to take some ice cream home with you. It's proof alcohol ice cream. Think differently about dessert. There's a little 7% ABV in every pint of ice cream, and you can find whatever you'd like in our branded red freezers out in the kitchen, just like anybody listening here can find at a Total Wine, a Triangle Wine Company, a Lowe's, or a Harris Teeter. Look for that red freezer, and you can think differently about dessert. Go to proofalcoholicecream.com for more information.
Yeah, we prefer that you buy it at Triangle Wine Company and then use your NCFB promo code for a nice discount. And
yeah.
Plus, you can get all delicious wines to go with your fresh produce there as well.
We've thought of everything.
Yeah, we've thought of everything. So trianglewineco.com. Brooke, Evan, thank you so much for being here and your time and sharing the story about agriculture in the state. I think we all know it's important. So for any of you in southeastern North Carolina, check out Cape Fear Farm Credit, and please purchase locally. You will eat and drink very merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes, and remember, 5 stars are encouraged. Proof Alcohol Ice Cream. We pour art and science into every bite. An artisan ice cream company from Columbia, South Carolina. Proof is changing the way people think about dessert. Triangle Wine Company, locally owned and operated. Triangle Wine Company is committed to creating the best shopping experience in fine wine and craft beer.